Julie, welcome to the show. Very happy to have him. One of the great running backs in league history with the Calgary Stampeders. John Cornish joins us. John, how you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great, thanks.
Before we get to football, you're here for a big opportunity to help young kids, as you'll be putting on a camp tonight, you and a few others, for Jumpstart. How'd you get involved with Jumpstart?
It's one of those things where if you get involved more in the community, then more community events get involved with you. So, and when the CFL approached me to get involved with this, I 100% jumped on.
And at Jumpstart, really, in Winnipeg, they've helped over 6,000 kids get active by dispersing over $300,000. And it's really for kids who otherwise just wouldn't have the opportunity to do anything sporty.
You know, and there's a few different initiatives around, but I really like the Jumpstart program, Mark's Jumpstart program, because it's giving back to kids directly. I mean, today I'll be working with 60 kids, and we'll be putting them through a football camp, showing them a few basic things, maybe a few more advanced things, but really trying to leave with them things that they can do to get themselves better for any sport, or maybe, you know, help themselves in life.
Let's talk about the Grey Cup. Obviously, disappointing when you're here and your team's not in it, but I guess you guys can't be in it every year, although that would be ideal for you. I do want to ask your thoughts on a few of the guys who went into are going into the Hall of Fame today, and one that you used to have to run into quite regularly in Doug Brown. What made Brown so good on the D-line?
I don't want to say it's all just physical talent, but, he was a guy with 6'7 or 6'8. I know every single time our offense coordinator called an inside run play and he was in there, I was just waiting for him to smash me, because he would have a double team every single play, but it didn't matter who was double teaming him, because he would just throw one of the guys off. And at that point, you're dealing with this guy who has a wingspan of probably 8 feet. You can't get away from that. He's because he's so tall, he can just sort of fall forward, and he'll grab you. So I never really had very much fun playing against him. And actually, I credit that with my career average until he left against Winnipeg was not very high.
if he can slow you down, that would show just how dominant he was. A lot of CFL fans are wondering kind of the future of John Cornish. It's been a real disappointment, because concussions are something that they're still hard to determine for everybody. It's different every time. For you, I've seen some times where you're just hitting your head on the frozen turf has led to it. How frustrating has it been for you, and how much of a concern is it?
I wouldn't say it's been frustrating at all.
Okay.
I mean, for me, it's I enter this sport knowing the circumstances that I'm putting myself in. It's not very disappointing, not really worrisome, because I've put myself in position where if I did have to quit football, I was well positioned for it. And I know a lot of guys, they don't. That when the football is all you have, you get yourself into situations where you're playing too long, and that's not a situation I'm going to get myself in.
How much conversations do you have with a doctor? Because if it was a knee injury or a shoulder injury, unfortunately, hey, if you wanted to when you're 50 or 55, you can get a knee replacement, right? You can't really get a brain replacement. So is your injury the one that maybe makes you have to remove the athlete from you and focus more on kind of like the human aspect of it?
Well, I've never had a perspective where I've been an athlete. I've always been a person that played football. And because of that, I've always positioned myself to not be 100% dependent on football. And I think that's to my advantage, because in this case, you have different injuries happen. I mean, if you're limping around, it's going to impede your ability to play football. If you have a shoulder you can't touch anybody with it without it popping out, that's going to impede your ability to play football. And the head's the same way. So I don't really view a concussion as that much different. Obviously, there's a lot more science now about our understanding of concussions, and I'm a person that defers to scientific knowledge. And so because of that, I've really had to understand what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to accomplish. And the reality is there's not very much for me to accomplish in the CFL.
John Cornish joins us. We are live in Winnipeg for the 103rd Grey Cup. Are you becoming, you mentioned you obviously understand the science of it, you read up on it, you've probably done way more research on that than anything else. How do you feel the league can handle it moving forward, so other guys maybe don't get in the same situation? Or did you ever feel that you rushed back from after the first concussion, maybe not knowing you really had a concussion?
I took 6 weeks off after my first concussion. My symptoms has pretty much receded after the first three. I was in a position where, you know, I know a lot of guys, they'll come back before their knee's 100%, before their hamstring's 100%. In the case of the brain, I don't necessarily recommend such things.
Yeah.
And for me, I've taken enough time, because especially after this one, I knew I had to take some time. And unfortunately, the injury was so late in the season, I couldn't return.
Jerome Isom got hit by J.C. Sheridan in the last game. And, you know, some headshots are accidental. It's a contact sport, right? Some guys are going to get hit. Does tackling need to be addressed? Is it something? Do you think the league and the players are doing enough to try to limit the amount of guys with concussions? Because it's a contact sport, and maybe sometimes, you know, there's nothing you can do. Or is there still more you think the league and players can do?
Well, I think we just have a better understanding of reality as a whole now. And that means understanding that football players, they're just normal people too. And, you know, you nick your leg, you do something to your body, like, okay, that's one injury. But your head's a very different thing. So if we are not punishing your head-to-head contact, whether it's incidental or not, it's saying this is okay. We're okay with our players destroying each other's lives. Like I'm taking it to a logical, like, this is 55, 60, but CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is a real thing. You know, people's brains are looking not like human brains, but when they're getting autopsies. And is this something we want to condone? I mean, I don't think we have to. I think, you know, simply punishing head-to-head hits will discourage head-to-head hits. I think that's simple. You can say it's incidental, but I think at all, like, not maybe slapping the guy's helmet, but if you're putting your helmet to another person's helmet, I think there should be a penalty there.
Makes sense. John Huffnagel is a stepping away as a head coach. You've had him for a long time in Calgary. What made Huff such a good head coach?
I think Huff understood what it took to win. When you have a guy that lays it out very simply, what it takes to win. Not saying, like, super simple ideas where, oh yeah, just win, just look at the ball, just, you know, things like that. When you understand the deeper things that need to be done to win, like winning the special teams battle, winning the turnover battle, winning the penalty battle. When you do those things, winning is less about just, you know, winning, and more about just individual play. I mean, you can just focus on what you're doing as a team rather than worrying about big overarching, you know, sort of themes. I think because he was able to do that, he separated our team from other teams, because we were never really worried about, you know, the simple things. We were able to just focus on the things that were really important.
Now, he's very hard of hearing in the one ear. Did he use that to his advantage as a coach sometime? You know, if they listen to the players want to play, oh, sorry, I didn't hear you? Or, like, was it a kind of a – because he jokes around about it with the media all the time when he was like, what, I can't hear you. Don't talk to the other side of me.
Well, he's deaf.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not – something that's not well known, and it's not just one ear. He's encountered some difficulties with his hearing. But with that said, I think he hears a lot more than you think he does. So I think he does use it to his advantage.
Bo Levi Mitchell, one of the up-and-coming young quarterbacks, Mike Riley in the Grey Cup today, you know, Zach Caleros in Hamilton. We've kind of started to see the transformation of the next phase, maybe, of the great quarterbacks. Levi Mitchell came in and he just never lost. He won. Now, I know that one player doesn't win. You obviously need a great team to always win those games. But right away from the get-go, what was it about Bo Levi that you felt, okay, this guy is going to be a winner?
I think it was 2013 he came in and, you know, just lit up the league. I mean, he had three games as starter, three wins. And his first game in Winnipeg was it was a pretty impressive game. I was really looking forward to what he was going to do going forward after that. And, you know, he's just had success since then. And it's, you know, maybe this year, like, he was the West MOP. You know, we lost in the playoffs versus a great Edmonton team. I mean, these are things that happen. I mean, you can't win them all. But he's done an exemplary job at winning, because I think it starts with his own preparation. I mean, I think it's sort of a running joke in our locker room now that he's in the locker room at 5:30 in the morning. He gets a massage, gets stretched out, hits the hot tub, then he watches film. But it's that preparation that shows everybody else what it takes to win. And I think everybody else steps up their game because of it.
John Cornish joins us. When you came into Calgary, you really had to bide your time before you got to be the starting running back. And really, not because there used to be a lot of Canadian running backs, and then the league kind of went away from it. And then you've seemed to reopen that door, and we've got Andrew Harris and Jerome Messam, and there's more Canadian running backs. Do you feel you kind of reopened the door for the opportunity for Canadian running backs?
You know, I think Jerome Messam, that was 2011 when he had his big year. I thought that sort of was the start. I mean, that's when I started starting as well, but he had the 1,000-yard season that year. You know, I was a little bit disappointed when he went down to the States because I thought that was it was a great opportunity for him in Edmonton. But, you know, he made it work. And you know, I think overall the league has sort of discovered the capabilities of Canadian running backs, not just discounting them, but also the benefits that they bring. You know, if you change the ratio up a little bit, you get to start that an additional American receiver, maybe somebody on defense, and that gives you advantages elsewhere as well. So you get good players as well as, you know, a good other assets on the field.
As an active player, do you watch the game on Sunday? Is it like, man, I'd rather be in it, so I don't want to watch it? I know Henry Burris, of course, a former teammate. You've got a few others on this. Do you watch it as a fan, or do you watch it because you're here and you kind of have to watch it?
Well, I'm not necessarily I never have to do anything. For me, it's something that I watch because I'm a fan of the CFL. A lot of people say it was like, oh, they're disappointed. They hold on to this regret from the season. And, like, the second the last whistle blows in the game, I'm done. Like, that season's done. It's encapsulated, and it's packaged away. I mean, as a football player, you learn to take losses and wins, you know, as they come. But over the course of my career, I've learned that, like, you don't need to dwell. There's always the next season. And that's both a blessing and a curse, where there's a reset at the end of every season. So it doesn't matter who wins on Sunday. Next year is going to be a whole new ballgame.
Who do you think wins on Sunday?
You know, I'm on an Edmonton radio station. But I got a lot of teams on friends on the team of Ottawa. And I got to give them a little bit of love. I got to give Edmonton a lot of love. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the program. I have a lot of respect for how far Edmonton's come. You know, I was playing against them, you know, in the early Ricky Ray days, you know, where who knows who is going to win between us. Then they had a little bit of a lull, and now they've come full circle. They are a team that is, you know, I think very much established as the best team in the West right now. I think there's going to be a very heated rivalry next year between the Stampeders, them. You know, Sask is going to be back. BC is going to make changes as necessary. Winnipeg as well. You know, there's going to be a lot of different people going in the West next year. Now, with all that said, I think it's going to be a passing battle that, it remains to be seen. It's going to be coming down to the defenses.
And one last one on Edmonton, because for the Stamps, you guys owned the Eskimos really up until this year. Yeah, I think you won, I don't know what it was, 10 or 11 straight games. They couldn't beat you. And that was a big thing. Some of the players talked about just that mental hurdle for them to finally get over and beat you guys in the regular season, and that helped them. As a guy who played against them, what was the biggest difference you've noticed just in their overall team in the last 2 years? Is it all from Coach Jones' system? What's been different from that team before when you guys were beating them?
I would say they really just covered some of their, like, weaker spots. I mean, the wide receiver position, they didn't really have too many threats. They picked up Darrell Walker, who immediately established himself as one of the better players in the league. Darius Bowman, he's a guy that's going to come out and make explosive, huge plays. You know, when you have two threats like that and a quarterback like Mike Riley, it gives you advantages that you didn't previously have. And Mike Riley's come a long way with his game. I remember seeing him play for BC before, and how he, like, without winning the game, he made his presence noticed. I knew he was going to be a big-time starter for this league, and to see him move to Edmonton, you know, take some time to sort of get all settled into the role. But to now see him playing in the Grey Cup, you know, I got to give the Edmonton team a lot of credit. But I think it's both the players and the coaching staff. I mean, Chris Jones is he might be a peerless coach in this league, because the way he approaches the game, I mean, he doesn't necessarily respect his opponents, but he's always prepared for them.
They definitely have a swagger under Coach. He's kind of, people joke, he's a little mini Don Matthews in a lot of senses. He's got a long way to go to have the same success that Don had as far, you know, the all-time winning coach in the league. And John, I know CFL fans hope that they see you again on the football field. And if not, I know they'll see you in the community in Calgary and maybe on the CFL broadcast in the future, I would guess. So hopefully somewhere we'll see you involved in the CFL.
Hopefully. I mean, you know, the CFL's given me so much, so it's only fair that I try and give back as much as I can.